I just, first of all, I'd like to say that as we experience joys this week, be sure to go back and write them on a piece of paper and put it in the joy bowl. So that will be something for Friday. So we'll do something with that. And, you know, with Judy telling some of the stories and everything, it reminds me of a story I got to tell you. And this story is a true story. It's a true one because I was there. I really was. I was a little boy back then when this story happened. I was just a little boy. It happened at least 6 months ago. Yeah, I was a little boy. But you know, I used to play. I love to play. You like to play? I love to play too. And I like to play. I played in my backyard. I played in a sandbox. I did everything. And my mama, she was a good mama, and she was always there and watched over me and kept me from getting into trouble or anything like that. Well, one day though, she said, "Billy," she never called me Billy, but that's okay. "Billy, I gotta go down to the store, so I'm gonna leave you here by yourself. You think you're big enough to stay all by yourself?" I said, "Why, sure, Mama, I'm big enough." So she went out to the store, and I went in the back, and she told me to stay there in the backyard. So I was there in the backyard, and I was just playing in the sandbox. I was watching them little ants fly, just going one by one in there. And I'd take a little stick, and I'd lay it down there, and they'd have to go around the stick and put a piece of little straw, piece of straw down there. And they'd pick up that straw, and they'd carry it away. And I was having fun. Even had took that straw and I put it down a little hole trying to get a doodle bug. You ever try to get a doodle bug? You put it down in a hole and wait till it moves and then you grab it real fast. And up comes the bug because the bug has grabbed the straw. That's how you get doodle bugs. But I was playing and all of a sudden I heard a noise. And I thought, it's going to rain. That's thunder. And then I heard it again. And then I said, "Oh, that's my tummy. Oh, I'm hungry. I'm hungry." So I go inside and I holler out, "Mama! Mama!" All I got was an ear full of silence. And then I remember, oh, Mama had gone to the store. So I said, "I know, I'm hungry though. What am I going to do? Oh, I know, I'll get me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich." You like peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Oh, yeah. And you got to have, I just got to have the peanut butter and jelly sandwich to get. And I was a big boy, you know, about, that's all, or whatever. Right? But I said, I can get it myself. So I went to the bread drawer. You know how you pull out the drawer and it's got a little tin top on it and then you kind of fold out the tin. That was where you kept your bread. And I reached down in there and got the loaf out and it was Wonder Bread back then. You know how Wonder Bread builds your body 12 different ways. Well, that's what I was Wonder. I wasn't strong as Superman, but I got me a couple slices of Wonder Bread and I put them out there on the table and I put that back. And then I went and got the peanut butter. Yeah, gotta get the peanut. I got the jar of peanut butter. And it was a struggle, but I got that top unscrewed on there. I was so proud of myself. I got that top unscrewed all by myself. And I put that peanut butter up there. And then I went to look for the jelly. And I looked in the fridge. I couldn't see no jelly, nowhere, no how. And I thought, what am I going to do? You got to have jelly. It's got to be grape jelly. You know, you can have strawberry jelly or whatever, but grape jelly is what you got to have with peanut butter. So but I didn't know what to do. I couldn't find no jelly. So I thought, well, can't find no jelly. I'll just have to do peanut butter all by itself. So I went over there to get something to get the peanut butter out of the jar. Well, my mama, She never let me have a knife. She knew that, you know, she thought I'd cut myself or do something like that. But you know, I'd never cut myself. I'd never do something like that. No. So I never got to use a knife. But anyway, I thought I'd get a spoon. So I reached that drawer and I got me a big spoon. And I got that jar and I put that spoon down in that jar and I just scraped around and got a Oh, a big old wad of peanut butter on that spoon. And I thought, oh boy, I'm going to have me a peanut butter sandwich. And I got that piece of bread. And I picked up that piece of bread. And I tried to spread that peanut butter on that bread. And the bread just fell apart all down on the floor. And I thought, well, must have been a bad piece of bread. So I got the other piece of bread. And I tried it. And it did the same thing. It was all, and it just tore all to pieces. I thought, well, what am I going to do? I don't got no bread, and I got all this peanut butter. I know what I'll do. I'll just eat the peanut butter all by itself. Yeah. So I took that big spoonful of peanut butter, and I put it in my mouth. I had this big mouthful of peanut butter, and I couldn't chew, and I couldn't talk, and I was gonna do? I can't do nothing at all. So I took the spoon and I scraped and I scraped and I scraped and I got all that peanut butter out. But I was still hungry. And I looked at that thing of peanut butter and I said, I'm hungry. So I put it back in my mouth. But I did it again. It got all stuck in my mouth. I couldn't do nothing with it. So I had to take the spoon and I scrape, and got it all out. But I was still hungry. And I was about ready to cry. About then my mama, she came in the door and she looked down at me and she saw all the bread all over the floor and she saw me with this big spoon full of peanut butter. And she said, Billy, you know, she never called me Billy, but that's all right. She said, Billy, what are you doing? I looked up at her and I said, I'm hungry. Well, my mama, she was a good mama. She just kind of shook her head, put down the groceries, and she came over there and she just gave me a big hug. And then she fixed me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And she got me a glass of milk to go with it. She's a good mama. Real good mama. Now, this is my story. And each one of you got a story. Each one of you got a story. All of you got a story. Yeah. And your story is unique. Your story is your story. And it's the best story of your life. Because it is your life. And we have joy in our stories. We really do. Our stories are joyful, filled with joy, because that's who we are. And tonight, we've got the best story of all. The story that Jeshua shares with us. Jeshua.
Blessed ones, holy ones, children of the Most High, I am Mary, Mother of Christ, Mother of One Yeshua. You also are Mother of Christ. You are bringing forth an awareness of Christ. You are bringing forth the fullness of the knowing of who you are and living it from the heart. I have made what you would probably call in this day and time the peanut butter sandwich for One Yeshua. Now, it was not exactly the peanut butter that you know was not made of peanuts. But I made for him some of what you still have in this day and time of the unleavened bread and some of the crushed fruits. One of his favorites was the fig sandwich. And I would make for him between the two wafers a, what do you call when it is smushed? Sort of a jam type thing you would call it now, of the figs mixed with honey. That was his favorite. And he, like the story that you just heard, was hungry from time to time. It was a very loving relationship that we had. It was a very divine relationship that we had. Because I knew from before he was born that he would be Messiah to his people. There had been the prophecies that had been passed down, and I had heard the prophecies, and I knew that the timing was come. It is most, what do you call, advantageous? More than that, that we are meeting at a certain time of the year. For 2,000 years ago, more or less, it was not exactly 2,000 years ago, at this time of the year, I was quite full of child. Because although you celebrate Yeshua's birthday in December, in truth, he was born towards the end of August, towards the end of summer. So at this point in the year, in our travels, I was quite large and expecting a most wonderful birthing. So yes, Yeshua, it had been prophesied that there would be Messiah, and I had received message the same as you have been receiving messages from the greater self of you, the angels, the messengers who give you messages, the knowing that you have at a very deep level. I had been given message that the child that I was carrying and allowing to grow to full term was going to be Messiah. And you have a story, and I did ask, as you would ask, how can this be? I am just a Jewish maiden. I did not feel especially different from anyone else. And yet there was a knowing, a very deep knowing, that the child that I carried was going to be making changes in the world. Before my birth, there was a message to my mother, Anna, that I was going to be making some changes in the world. And I was looked upon with favor because it was expected that I would do something. It was, in truth, it was foretold that I would be the bearer of the Messiah. Did I believe it? No. No more than what you would believe. Hope, yes. Great hope. But I would be asking the same as you. Why me? How could this be? Now your story that you have, that is foretold, that Yeshua's father and I had to make trek to Bethlehem to be counted as part of the census that was being taken by Rome, wanting to know how many of the peoples that lived in this area could be called upon for support of the various activities of Rome. And so we were asked very strongly, you could not say no, but it wasn't asking, to please travel to the place of your family's birth to be counted and to make your mark and to pay your tax. So at this point in the summer, we made trek to Bethlehem. And I was, as those of the female persuasion in this day and time, I was quite large, heavy, ready to give birth and to be back to my, what I felt was an easier carriage. I did not complain, at least outside, outwardly, but I did feel quite cumbersome. But I also knew that it was going to be a most important birth. I was not quite sure that the prophecies were true for me. I did feel that the child I was bearing and giving in time birth to was going to be a teacher, because there had been a lineage of teachers, rabbis, in my family. And so I knew that there was a very good chance that he would be of a persuasion, studious, and that he would study the texts, the writings. I was of the Essene lineage. We came, Joseph and I, from the Essene settlement, I suppose you would call, at Mount Carmel. And I was very, what you would call now in this day, devout in my prayers and in my knowing. And I knew that something of great portent was going to be happening. But I want to make the point to all of you of the female gender in this time, and the male as well, because you are important in all of this. I knew, as you have known, that my participation in this was to be helpmate and to give birth and to be joyous about it. And as the story you have read and you have heard, the time for the birth came when we were in Bethlehem. And yes, we were not given a room in the inn, but the reason was not that the inn was full. It was because the innkeeper and wife, his wife, were of the Essene persuasion and knew of the prophecy. And they did not feel that the inn, with all of the party-making ones, the travelers, was a suitable place for a woman ready to give birth. And so I was given a very most wonderful place in the stable, with the animals, with the hay, the straw, everything I could want. And there was the innkeeper's wife, was a midwife by training. Everything you see was brought into place that needed to be in place. So it was not quite the way your masculine scholars have written the story. I was well looked after, and it was a very clean and very wondrous place out of the noisy crowd. So at this time of year, there was an anticipation of the birth of one who would be, as the story was told, Messiah to his people. That he would, as the story went, he would set up another nation. He would be king, king of the Jews. He would lead our people out of the servitude that we felt with the Romans. And he would make a big change in everything. Well, this came to be true, but in a slightly different way. And when Yeshua was small, he was, as the story that you have just had, a most loving son. A most, I will say, of course, as mother, precocious child. And he wanted to know why. Why do butterflies fly? Why do figs grow on trees? Why do the sheep give of their wool and then it is replaced as they grow more? Why do birds die? Because he found a bird that was seemingly dead by the side of the road. And he knew at a very deep level that life is forever, always, ongoing. And so he picked up the bird. And he knew that there was life still in the bird. And he called forth that life. And the bird fluttered its wings, looked up at him, and then flew away. He knew that life is always. He would do this with his playmates, who did not quite understand what was happening. You were one of his playmates. And you looked to see what would be happening. Why? And he would say, because life is. There is no ending to life. It can be re-energized, the life force, if there is desire. And so he was always taking the small ones that had expired, in other words, they had breathed their last breath, seemingly, and he would breathe life back into them. And his playmates thought at first that this was rather different, but then, as magic is, there was a knowing of remembrance that, yes, this is true. This part of the story is not written anywhere, but his playmates knew how to breathe life back into any small one that was seemingly expired, that its time had expired, or whatever you want to call it, however you want to call it. And so there was a whole grouping of ones who knew, even in this day and time, there is a knowing that life is forever ongoing. As he went later on in his life to prove on the cross, he allowed the body to expire. But that was not the end of him. You have a saying that I have heard that I find most humorous, but very true. Once have said that perhaps Yeshua was crucified on the cross, but that in the end, he got hold of the right end of the stick, of a piece of wood, and proved his point. Well, it seemed to be rather humorous, as it was explained to me. You have many idioms, expressions in your language that are humorous. Especially as you have ones who want to make a turn of story. You are one who is good at doing that, to tell a story and then to bring the humor of it out. In fact, most of you are good at that. Yeshua was a most wonderful companion, I will put it that way, because he and I and his father Joseph understood life and understood the miracle, as others might look upon it, of ongoing life. Not only the human life, but also of the animals. And so he was teacher to us as we were teacher to him. It was very much a shared understanding. Because in truth, the same as it is with you, each and every one of you, you are what would be termed an old soul. You have knowledge, you have remembrance, and if you will trust it, it can work miracles. Never think that you are too old or too, molded by the world, that you cannot know the truth of your being. You do know it at a very deep level, which is why you are here in this week, to meet with other ones and to be able to rekindle within yourself that joy of living. It is not by accident that you have chosen that as your theme for this week, the joy of living, the joy of being, because truly at a very deep level, that is where you live, in your joy. You have tried in other lifetimes to be the one who was most heavy in your way of going through life. And that was not too much fun. This lifetime, you have said, I will understand the world. I will understand the language of the world. But I will not be of the world. I will be in it, yes. I will walk with my friends. And I will understand the world. But I will not be of the world. I am of eternity. So, you find your joy. You find your joy in the four-footed ones who speak to you, who love you, look up to you, sometimes test the patience. And as you sometimes test their patience, because they want something and they are allowing you to know what they want, and you are sometimes not listening, so they have to be a bit patient with you. I guess it is what you call the two-way street. But the love that they exhibit is your nature as well, which is why you feel a certain relationship with them, a certain knowing, a sharing of love. This was something that Yeshua shared with the family. For in truth, you have had teaching that has said that he was, that first of all, that Joseph was not his father. Well, that is not true. Joseph was his earthly father, yes. And that he was a solitary being and did not have biological brothers and sisters. That also is not true. Why would the essence of life, love, deny him the love of biological sisters and brothers? He was not denied. He had brothers and sisters. You have one, James, who is most famous. There is a writing of his in your holy book. But there were more. There was Sarah. There was Constance. There was Suzanne. There was James. And there was Thomas. And there was another one most dear to me, who walked with me, comforted me at the time of the crucifixion. One called Peter. Now you have these names in your Bible, your holy writing, but some of the details of family, it was thought by your holy fathers that they would follow the patriarchal understanding. But that is only half of the story. Joseph and I, we were a happily married couple, very happy with each other. And there was much that we shared, including the children, including Yeshua. So it was told, and it is told in your holy writings, that Yeshua's birth was a miracle. And it was. But every birth is a miracle. Every time a new being takes incarnation, it is a miracle. And you get to learn from them as they learn from you. And fathers, earthly fathers, are important. They are not just an also. As Joseph has said to you sometimes in his discourse with you when he has a chance to, as he calls it, get out, he is not just an also mention in the holy writings. He was biological father to Yeshua. And when he is acknowledged as such, he celebrates it. He was a very good father. He cared for the children. He taught them what he knew. He taught, you do have this story, that he taught Yeshua the art of carpentry, of making the furniture for a house, being one with the wood, knowing the oneness with wood. And Joseph speaks to you every time he has a chance to speak to you of his love of wood, and he passed that on to Yeshua as well. Yeshua knew and had a trade to fall back on if being rabbi did not suffice. But as you know, being a rabbi was his true calling. And as the drama would play out, being a rabbi, well, he had a different take on things. And some of the holy fathers at that time did not agree with his broader view of life. One of his first questions to me when we went to the temple in Jerusalem, he wanted to know, why do the women sit at one side and the men to another side? Well, that's the way it was always done. And then he said, like children do, but why? And I said, well, it's just the way it's done. But why? So as you have known the questioning as you grew up, he very much had the questions because he saw equality of being, equality of light. He saw in his playmates the light of life, the light that activates the form. He saw the light in the bird that he said, hey, you're not finished yet. Well, he didn't say it in those words, but anyway, and brought that one back. He saw life and knew it. The, what you call the aura around you, the light that is so now being understood. He saw that. He saw that around every living being. including the trees, including the birds, including the small ones. Everyone, he could see that. And the bird that had thought it had expired, it still had the light around it. So he just kind of energized the light a bit more, and the bird flew away. He came to teach. He came to be example. He came to be rabbi, and he came to father other children. Yes, I had grandchildren. Made me most happy. As a good Jewish mother, I was very happy to have the grandchildren. So this, what I am speaking with you in this evening, is the annotated version. It is not the version that has been given to you down through the ages as being the first and last word of God, all together in one book. In truth, there are many writings that could be added to that holy book, and these writings are still extant in this time and can be found, and ones that perhaps were not written at that time are coming to be known in this day and time through the mediumship, as you call it, of ones who are tuned in, ones who walked with him, played with him, knew him, and want to add to the knowledge of him. Most delightful, on 4 feet. Most delightful. Yeshua was one who loved everyone. All of his playmates, all of the ones growing up. He loved the understandings that he got from reading the certain, what were called in that day and time, scriptures, but all that meant was that it had been written. Your root word of scripture just meant that it was something that had been written. And he studied all of the ancient manuscripts that the Essenes had collected and revered and kept in good condition, so that oftentimes ones in the Essene community would copy. Part of the learning was to sit with a manuscript, an ancient writing perhaps, and to recopy it. And in recopying it, it was learned, it was remembered by doing the painstaking, even sort of laborious, although it had its reward, of copying the manuscripts, so that they have been preserved. All of you, you have done this. All of you have copied the ancient manuscripts and revered what was handed down. The Essenes were a certain derivative, perhaps that's the right word, of the Jewish tradition. And it was what I would describe as an enlarged version of the Jewish teachings. You have in this day and time the Jewish teachings. But the Essene outlook on things was to revere and keep in the forefront of the young ones coming up the ancient traditions. The rituals, yes, but also the writings of the ancient knowledge of life, going back to the time of Noah, going back to the time even before that, when there was the discourse with ones from other planetary systems. You have legend, and you say, well, that's a nice story. But where does that information come from? It comes from the truth of your being. It comes from your history. It comes from what seems to be legend, ancient history, and yet it is true. Yes, in what you would call now prehistory. I have heard that term used, and some of the ones who refer to Yeshua's life, my mother's life, Anna, as being prehistory, as being very ancient. Well, everything, I suppose, is relative. And yes, we are related. All of you. If you will receive it, and it does stretch the mind a bit, but that's okay. That's why you have a mind. All of you at one time have been my child, my children. There is a knowing that you feel with me, a loving. And it is why some of you have followed a certain tradition where I am revered as Mother of Christ. And as I have said in the beginning of this evening, I am, and you are as well. But you have all, in one lifetime or another, been my child. There is a knowing deep within you that you recognize love. That is what I mean by you are my child. You are a child of love. So if perchance any day comes and you are feeling a bit not as happy and joyful as perhaps you'd like to be, open the mind and go to the place of remembrance and know that truly you have walked with Yeshua. You have walked with me. You have walked with Joseph. You have walked with all of the so-called ancient masters. That is why you are drawn in certain lifetimes to study some of the scrolls, some of the now what is coming and being handed down. Your technology is recording sound and teaching. Not only do you have the written word to read, but you are leaving for your descendants, my descendants, a auditory record of history. And there will be more in what you call the future, more remembrances, more clues. So if an idea comes to you, if a knowing comes to you that, yes, I have met this person before. Maybe I don't know them in this lifetime. Maybe they seem to be familiar, but I don't really know them. Know that there is a very deep connection. And if you sit with it and ask, ideas will come to you. Truth, strands of truth will come to you that you will know. You may not be able to verify it, or you may, but there will be a knowing, a very deep knowing that you can trust. There is much more to life, to being, to existence than just existence. Much more to life than what you have ever acknowledged. I have to search for the certain terminology. Much more. You are much more than just the being that walks on 2 feet and loves the four-footed one. You are much more than every part of life that you see. Because if you will take this to its logical extension, everything that you see, you have been. You know intimately the life in the cocoon. You know intimately the life of every little furry critter because you have been it. You know the life of the snail. I watch you. You know the life of the trees, the ferns, every part that will move in the wind. You know the wind because you have gone as the wind. Every part of life is sacred. Every part of life is holy. That is what Yeshua came to share with you. That is why I come when there is opportunity to share with you, to revere life in every form, to get up in every morning and say, wow, wow, I am alive. Know you that feeling, the exuberance of being alive? Yes. And even if there is part of the body that perhaps is not as limber as it might have been some earlier time, you can reprogram it, I think it's called. Rejuvenate. There's a good word. Rejuvenate the body. And allow yourself to be young. You are as young as the new day, every day. And as old as the hills. The hills, maybe even older than the hills, because you are the ones who have created the majestic mountains and hills that are around here. You are the authors of every part that you experience. You are the maker of it. Look upon the miracles of what you bring to enjoy, to watch the wind in the trees. You do not see the wind, but you see what it does. You may not see me most of the time. This truly is not my body. The body that was most familiar to me was more round. The height, yes, about the same, but there was more amplitude to it, if that's a word, I don't know. But anyway, and the hair, it was longer. I gathered it back into what you would call the braid, a very long braid, because you see, it was tradition not to cut the hair, but to allow it to grow. And then as it grew, it would be braided. And sometimes we would allow the braid to be wrapped around the head, or sometimes to just allow it as the maiden, it would be more free-flowing. But you know, when Joseph and I took to bed, I let the hair down because he loved my hair. Now, you will not find that written anywhere. But you can take it to heart because you can feel a truth in it. Joseph, yes, Joseph, he is here. He says, I make him blush. I did not know I could do that. It was a most wonderful marriage, a most wonderful partnership. And yes, we were betrothed before the marriage, and there was Yeshua on the way before the marriage. It is only in some of the writings and some of the more, what you call the modern view of things, that would say that it was a sin. Love is never a sin. Never. And yes, we loved. And yes, we favored each other. And yes, a child was born of that love. And it was a celebration. But you will not find that written. It was written, but then it was crossed out. Take that with you in this evening. Know that truly, love is always a gift to the one who receives it, and a gift to the one who gives it. Live in love. Love freely. Yes, you have to do certain mores of each custom and time. That is okay. But you can always love. You may not follow through on the physical. Or you may. But there is no sin in that either. Allow yourself to live in joy. Allow yourself to live in love. Because that is your nature. So be it. Okay, we'll take a break for, let's say, about 10 minutes or so. And then Joshua has something he wants to share. Okay. Beloved friends, peace be with you. Thank you. I asked for a little bit of time to speak with you about what my beloved wife, Mary, had shared with you. Mary and I still do have fun with each other. Because that is what life is all about. And yes, we are still alive. Form has changed, but life goes on. Yes, we felt an attraction to each other at Mount Carmel. I was older than she. I had known woman before her. But when she came to study at Mount Carmel, as the maiden that she was, there were questions that she asked, and I could see that she was a bit more questioning, perhaps a deeper thinker, you could say, about what she wanted to know about life and eternal life and the mystery of life. So there were times that she sought me out because I was one of the masters there at the community. And she sought me out many times to discuss as she was growing into maidenhood and as she read and copied the manuscripts. And there were afternoons that we spent together by the stream, watching the most beautiful, the dragonflies at the water, and being in awe of life and the various forms of life. And there was much that she questioned, and there was much that I could share with her, because I also had come through the same stream of thinking and copying the manuscripts when I was of her age. And so there were questions that I had had at her time, at her age. And I had gone to my teachers at that point. I had gone to one that you know, Judith. She was one of the Essene teachers that I had gone to and asked questions of. And so I passed on to Mary, what I knew, and what I had read, what I had studied, and some of what I shared with her sufficed, and some of it did not, because she had a very inquiring mind, and she wanted to know, and she kept questioning, wanting to know. So there were many times when we sat by the flowing water and shared with each other the questions, the answers that we felt that had to be true, and the understanding that went beyond just the mental gymnastics of what had been written and what had been shared with us and what we felt had to be true, because there had to be more. And she was questioning and wanting to know more. So you see, in the Essene community, the boys and the girls were not kept separate, and they were not kept in a place where the males were more revered than the women or the maidens. And so there was much of the discourse that we had, much of her growing up that I really admired. There was a kindred spirit that we shared. And so in time, this came to be a very deep love that we had for each other and with each other. And yes, as a natural outgrowth of the closeness that we felt because of what we were learning, studying, feeling, ascertaining in our own way, there was also the growing closeness of body. So yes, it was not all that unusual that a maiden would be with child before she was married. Married sometimes that had to come later when the male was seen to be in a position to support the maiden. But as my most wondrous helpmate, Mary, has shared with you, love in any of its forms, whether it be physical or just as you would term it, spiritual. And the spiritual is in truth no more valuable than the physical, because one is an expression of the other. And so we shared that. It was a very, very deep love. So allow yourselves to live in love. Allow yourselves to be happy about life. Allow yourself to be in joy. It is not by accident that that is the emphasis for this week. Hopefully, you will take it back to your dwelling places and will remember on each day to be in joy, to be alive. Or, as a master has once shared with you, and I will end with this saying, to be alive, alert, joyous, and enthusiastic about life. So be it. Yes, thank you. Okay, well, I think that kind of wraps everything together, makes a nice package. Been an interesting evening, and yes, I am going to listen to the tape. Wow.